Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big-time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd on the Double with the Double S Express.
Good evening. Welcome to On the Double with the Double S Express, show 45. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. What's going on, Mr. Boyd?
Man, the March Madness is definitely what's going on, and if you haven't been paying attention, Sean Wally, it has been a huge, huge weekend, and of course, I know you have been paying attention coming back from the Spokane Regionals for the NCAA tournament, man.
Absolutely. College basketball is a fabulous sport right now, and definitely this time of year, and a guy that's called a lot of college games in his day is with us right now on the HolySmokeNuts.com phone lines, and we'll welcome in big-time guest number one, Rich Waltz. Rich, thanks so much for your time tonight.
Holy smoke. College basketball. What a great start to this NCAA tournament. It's, the number of storylines and buzzer beaters and upsets and all of that mixed in has made for a very entertaining first week, hasn't it?
Yeah, Rich, and so, let's talk a little bit of basketball since you probably don't get to talk about it too much on the air. How's your bracket going?
Here's the funny thing. This is the first time in about 15 years I have not done a bracket. I was I did the Mountain West tournament for CBS. And then I did the Division III championship game for CBS this weekend. And in between then, I was getting my stuff set down here in Miami for baseball season. And so I've been so consumed by, you know, getting clothes and getting stuff back down here to Miami because I'm kind of splitting time between Seattle and Miami now that I forgot to fill out a bracket. So, which is actually not a bad thing because now I – rather than have a rooting interest in teams that for games, I'm more of an observer, and it's been fascinating to watch because then you find yourself rooting for underdogs and rooting for coaches that you know and like and rooting for teams that you've seen not only this season but in the past few seasons in the different conferences that I call. And so all in all, it's been a fun watch.
So you mean to tell me, Rich, I mean, my goodness, you must be making lots of money calling games, man. I mean, there was $1 billion at stake with Warren Buffett throwing it out, and you're telling me that you didn't want any part of that?
Well, I know for a fact that it's mathematically impossible to pick a perfect bracket, especially in this day and age. So I think I read somewhere where after the first two weekends there were no perfect brackets left. So, unfortunately for Warren, his Creighton Blue Jays went down in yesterday, and that was a stunning game. That was one of the biggest surprises, I think, of the first two sets of games for me was seeing Creighton lose. I had Creighton, I want to say, late February, and got a chance to watch McDermott, and they looked really, really good. And to see Baylor just manhandle him like that was a real surprise. I don't know that a lot of people, I don't think a lot of people are surprised that they lost, but to lose in that fashion was a big surprise.
Yeah, you better believe it. I mean, one of the things about the tournament this year, Rich, is that there are more upsets than probably ever before. I mean, we're talking about the 5-12 matchup that has been so. I guess it's tossed upside down. I mean, there's four out of the five, or I believe three out of the four 5-12 matchups have gone in favor of the number 12 seed.
Well, and it's, you know, the one thing is, I think what's happening is if you're in the game and you see these teams play, you realize that those really aren't upset. And if you see these teams play and then you see a matchup coming in, you know, you're telling yourself, you know what, that's not going to be a surprise if that happens. Teams get hot. Teams get cold. I had a pretty good idea Harvard was going to beat Cincinnati. I had Harvard in January. I had Cincinnati as well this year, and the styles of play just didn't. That matchup was not a good one for Cincinnati because they just couldn't score. They had Sean Kilpatrick who could score, but nobody else. And Harvard was really fluid and really had a lot of weapons, you know, Rivard from the outside and all that. So that was a 12-5 where you look at it going in, you're thinking, if Harvard wins, that's not an upset. In fact, I would have been surprised had they not won.
Rich, you mentioned a couple of the teams that you did get to call their games this college basketball season. Moving forward in this tournament, are there one or two teams that you like and you're keeping your eye on?
Florida is one. I've been around Billy Donovan's program a lot since I've been on the East Coast. I only had Florida once this year, and it's a different Florida team. It's you know, his teams are always really good defensively. People think that that don't follow college basketball that much, or that know Billy Donovan from his history as of being a 3-point shooter, who's a player, think that it's a, you know, a run and gun type team. It's a play hard nosed defense team first, and then get creative offensively after that. And he said earlier this year that this is not his most talented team, but it may be his team that plays best together, and maybe the team that plays the hardest that he's ever had. And that's saying a lot. And you know, watching them defensively, that's, if they can muster enough offense, they're certainly deserving of being a favorite going in. So that matchup against UCLA is interesting because UCLA is a very fluid team. Kyle Anderson's so talented at 6'8", 6'9", and runs the floor well and handles the ball so well. That's going to be an interesting game. But I like Florida in that one. San Diego State, Arizona is one that I want to watch because I had that game back in November, and it was down at San Diego State. It was a 4-point game with a minute left, and Arizona ended up hitting free throws and winning it by 8 or 9. But San Diego State is maybe the best defensive team, along with Florida. Steve Fisher's team is so, so good defensively. They're long. You know, they're Winston Shepherd's their two guard, and he's 6'8". So that's an interesting game because Arizona has looked brilliant at times and looked mortal at times. And if Xavier Thames can score, that's a then Eagles got a shot in that game. Anytime Kentucky Louisville play, that's big stuff, especially down in that state and in this region down here. Virginia's a team I want to see. Now, they've drawn Michigan State. Michigan State, to me, is not a 4 seed. Many people pick Michigan State to win the game. But I've seen Virginia and fans in Washington know Joe Harris's story, or at least they should, because, you know, Joe is out of Lake Chelan. And when Tony Bennett was at Washington State, he recruited Harris, who was a dominant high school player at a very small school, and not many people, you know, projected him to go to a big Division I school and do what he did. But Bennett saw something that he liked, and when Bennett got the Virginia job, convinced Harris to go with him. And I've had a chance calling ACC games to watch that program grow and watch Harris grow and to see them blossom this year, win the ACC, and now get the Sweet 16 has been pretty cool.
Rich, talking about the Sweet 16, you and I met back in December when you were calling a Washington State game for the Pac-12 network. And are you surprised at all that three of the Sweet 16 teams are out of the Pac-12 in Stanford, UCLA, and Arizona?
No, because I think people, I think most people that were in that conference and around that conference agreed that the Pac-12 was on a upper trajectory. They had a lot of talent coming back. Certainly Oregon had talent coming in as far as transferring. You knew that Arizona was really going to be good. And with Steve Alford taking over, the cover wasn't bare. This isn't like this is Steve Alford suddenly, you know, creating this. You know, Ben Howland left some really good players there. So, no, I'm not surprised. I think Stanford's a surprise, certainly, because I can remember in early February, mid-February, that the talk was if they don't make the tournament, Johnny Dawkins is probably not long for that job, having not been to the NCAA tournament in his, a six-year run or however long he's been there. And And now look at them. They're not only in the Sweet 16, but they're playing Dayton, who's an 11th seed, to get to the Elite Eight. So, no, I'm not surprised. The league was good. It was fun calling games for the Pac-12 Network and fun to get to see some of the schools that I used to call when I was out on the West Coast.
Rich Walts, kind enough to join us on the Double with the Double S Express. And definitely, Rich, I have to concur with you, especially with Johnny Dawkins. I think the time is now for the Stanford Cardinal. You know, Johnny having that strong Duke Blue Devil background. And it's, you know, of course, it's a little disappointing to see the Duke Blue Devils go out so early. But you can actually see that style of play in the Stanford Cardinal. So, yeah, you're right. It is really good to see Johnny Dawkins lead this team into the Sweet 16.
Yeah, and you know, Tommy Amaker and Dawkins, and that's kind of the Mike Krzyzewski tree. And I've been fortunate enough to do some Duke games back here in the ACC. And I actually worked with Chris Patola with CBS on Saturday on the D3 National Championship game. And he's a former, I guess, an Army point guard and Duke assistant, and is Coach K's son-in-law. So we had a nice long talk about Duke this year, and you know, the whole Duke family is hopeful that Chris Collins gets Northwestern pointed in the right direction as well. So it's for Stanford, you're used to. I was just watching the Heat Portland game, and I guess it's Robin Lopez is blossoming. Both the Lopez twins are playing well, so. It's to see Stanford back where they used to be is nice to see. And it's good for the conference, too.
Yeah, I know a lot of our listeners in Northern California are very excited to see what is going on with the Stanford Cardinal. Now, switching gears just a little bit, of course, right in your wheelhouse here, we're talking about the Miami Marlins. And, of course, Cactus play is underway. Talk to us a little bit about what's going on in camp. I believe Rafael Furcal is going to be starting, the season on the injured reserve. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's not a big surprise. He did not come to camp in the best of shape. He had Tommy John surgery last year, and he's, you know, that's one of the things they knew when they signed him, is that he had trouble staying healthy. And he was looking for an opportunity to prove that he could still play, and so that was something that the Marlins were up for. But they have options at second base, and the two kids in camp that are battling for that position are having great camps. Derek Dietrich, the kid out of Georgia Tech, and Donovan Solano. So last I heard today at spring training, the plan is to start them on the disabled list retroactive to March 22nd, and he'd be eligible to come off on April 5th. He played on a backfield game today, but what they don't want to have happen is to get 50 games out of him. They want to get 110 or 120 games out of him. But for, you know, the Marlins, I think for Call's a small piece in what they see is a year which, by all accounts, will be much happier for Marlins fans and much more successful on the field. It's a young and talented team that, much to the chagrin and anger of a fan base, blew up that 2012 team. But the pieces they had got back in the trades with certainly with the Tigers and the Blue Jays are all fitting. And even the Dodgers trade, Nathan Eovaldi is their number three starter. So now comes the time where the names that you've never heard of suddenly are making up a really good young rotation and filling out a starting lineup, which has been bolstered by Jared Saltalamacchia from the world champion Red Sox. Miami was historically bad at everything offense. They did poorly last year. They were last in every category, and not only nationally, but in all of baseball. So their big holes were catcher, first, third. And they addressed all three of those holes in the offseason. And the young kids are back. And the biggest thing for fans around baseball and certainly for Miami, the biggest news at a Marlins camp is that the right fielder, Giancarlo Stanton, is happy, smiling, and he's taken ownership of this team. Last year, he was not happy. he was injured, and he had, by his accounts, a miserable season. That's really changed, and that's made a big difference with the rest of the team. And when he's happy and when he's swinging, he's fun to watch.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that we haven't talked about is the stability with the pitching and in the bullpen. And, of course, you know, Tom Keller, you know, doing a great job thus far. And, you know, he kind of had a rough outing this past outing.
Yeah, Tommy Kohler is a guy that's really had to earn his way to the big leagues. Stony Brook is not a baseball factory, but he's one of those guys where he was a late pick and just won every way, you know, every step of the way. He wasn't a first-round pick that was handed a major league contract and a shot to pitch in the big leagues. He's earned it. Today gave up a couple runs in five innings. Didn't have his best stuff. It was raining at the start of the game, and he really, you know, and you can look at it two ways. You can look at it, he wasn't sharp in terms of pitches, but you can also look at it that he was able to limit the opponent to just two runs, that, you know, a pretty good Nationals team in five innings on a day where he didn't have his best stuff. So I think Kohler will probably be that number five starter. You get the Rookie of the Year at the top with Jose Fernandez. You've got the Henderson Alvarez who came in the Blue Jays trade who threw that no-hitter, that unique no-hitter on the last day of the season last year. And you've got Eovaldi, who's one of the hardest throwers in baseball, the young right-hander that the Marlins got in the Hanley Ramirez trade. And then Jacob Turner, he'll be the number four man on that rotation. He was the main piece in the trade with the Detroit Tigers. So, and for the Marlins, their next wave of prospects are ready to go. There was a scout the other day that said that the Marlins have 7 to 8 guys who belong in a major league rotation, which is great depth, and that's a gold currency in baseball. If you can develop young starting pitching and have it produce, and that can turn an organization around in a real hurry. And I know that the Marlins themselves and Miami fans are hopeful that this is a nice first step in doing so.
Rich, you've worked for just about every major sports network out there calling games. Obviously, the last 10 years for the Marlins on Fox Sports Florida. You've been in the Pacific Northwest with various TV networks and calling games for the Mariners and, of course, the college networks we've discussed. What are your fondest memories of your career, which is a great body of work?
Wow. One of my fondest memories was the first broadcast I ever did, which was Spokane Chiefs Hockey. I finagled my way into a hockey job. That was my first job out of college. I knew nothing about hockey, and I've never seen a hockey game, actually. And I studied and was ready, and the first game came around. It was Portland against Spokane, and they dropped the puck, and the puck never moved. It was a line brawl that lasted, you know, 10 minutes, and they didn't resume the game for 40 minutes, and I was dying on the air because it's my first broadcast, and I figured if I survived that, I'd survive anything. You know, just the chance to go places and meet people and spend time with people and work with analysts and coaches that you grew up watching them and getting a chance. I called the Wooden Classic for a couple of years, and the best part of that was getting to spend Fridays with John Wooden. I called Big Ten football for, you know, 5 or 6 years for ESPN, and one of the best things was doing a Penn State game and getting to have lunch with Joe Paterno and talk about his team. Calling a football game at Notre Dame, baseball games at Yankee Stadium, Fenway Park, Wrigley Field, hosting the Lou Piniella show for 9 or 10 years on television, was really, really cool. In the big moments, you know, there were a lot of, last second wins in college football for ESPN and ABC. There have been, you know, calling a perfect game with Roy Halladay was cool. A couple no-hitters for the Marlins, that was fun. Getting to do games at Duke has been great. I remember doing an ABC college football game at the LA Coliseum, which was really special because it was USC, and my grandfather was a huge USC fan, and he and I used to watch all the USC games together. Those are probably my fondest memories. And, you know, there are games off the map that you don't expect to be big, and they're not big-name events, but things happen. Like the game I did Saturday, the Division III National Championship game, two schools you've never heard of, probably Williams College and Wisconsin Whitewater. And it was a dynamite game, and it came down to the last 4 seconds. I think Williams was down by one. The big kid tipped the ball in. 4 seconds left to give him a one-point lead, and then the guard from Whitewater grabbed the ball and went Tyus Edney up the floor, and in less than 4 seconds got up the floor and got a left-handed runner-up, and it went in for the win. And that was, you know, that's a national championship. And then you know, the World Baseball Classic has been a really fun event to do for me for MLB Network. I've seen the Netherlands pull off three of the biggest upsets in international baseball history. They beat essentially a Major League All-Star team in the Dominican Republic in 2009, and this year they beat the powerful Cuban team over in Japan, which was, you know, great theater and great games and a lot of fun. So, yeah, I mean, I get paid to go to ball games, so how cool is that? I mean, so that's just about as fulfilling a thing as I can say about my career. Is I've made a living at going to ball games, and as a kid that grew up as an athlete, as a college athlete, as a college shortstop, wanting to play in the big leagues and being told I wasn't good enough to get there and make a living in the big leagues is very satisfying, and I'm very fortunate for that.
Rich, what advice would you have for somebody wanting to get into play-by-play and do what you do?
You know what? You don't have to go to Syracuse. You don't have to go to Northwestern. My advice would be find a college and a major where you learn to write, where you learn to – I was pre-law. Learn stuff. Learn – don't just take broadcasting classes. Go to a school that has a student station. Stanford has a great student. There's a lot of good, very good broadcasters that have come out of Stanford. Go to a good school that has a good reputation, and you can get on the air on the campus station, be it television or radio. And don't be afraid of being coached. I didn't take any broadcasting courses, but I attacked it as an ex-athlete, which I essentially was, and took coaching very well and tried to improve with every minor league game I did and every small college game I did, and apparently I was stupid enough to think that I could make it and didn't really look at the odds and was fortunate enough to do it. So that's what I was. It's like riding a bike. I mean, broadcasting is a lot like riding a bike. You can take a class in riding a bike. You can watch a video on riding a bike. You can listen to a lecture about riding a bike. But until you get on that bike and fall on your butt and get back up on the bike and fall on your butt again, you don't know how to ride the bike. And I think the same is true about being a broadcaster. It's just, it's doing the reps. It's getting the experience.
Rich Waltz, I appreciate your time tonight. And I know it's getting late down there in Florida. Thanks so much for your time and your insight.
No problem. And it was fun to get back on the West Coast. I grew up in the Bay Area, so it's fun to get back there. And living in Seattle in the winter, it's nice to retouch some of the places up in the Northwest as well. And we come out west to see the Giants. It's always a fun trip as well. So thanks for having me on. Anytime you want, just give me a shout.
Thanks, Rich. Thanks for being on the show, man.
Yep.
There goes Rich Waltz, play-by-play extraordinaire for the Miami Marlins. And, of course, our favorite Sean Wally, the Seattle Mariners. Man, it was good having Rich on the show.
And he's got ties all over the place, from the Northwest to Florida to all points in between. He mentioned the Bay Area, so
yeah.
There you go. Northern California to the Northwest to Florida, all over.
Yeah, you know, we didn't get a chance to talk about that. Of course, we didn't get a chance to talk about the Seattle Mariners. Go figure. But, man, when we come back, we're going to talk about more from the NCAA tournament, a little bit of NFL, and then our second guest, Greg Smith from Black Sports Online. So keep it locked in.
This is Michael David from Seattle. I've lost 35 pounds of fat, and my waist went from size 38 to size 32. I have more energy, and I look and feel 20 years younger.
Andro 400 is the natural, safe, and effective way to lose weight, gain energy, increase testosterone, and feel young again. Too good to be true? Then listen to what Bob and Jim have to say.
And in 30 days, I lost approximately 10 pounds. After another 30 days, I lost another 8 pounds, so a total of 18 pounds lost in 60 days. My libido has been increased 100-fold, and I feel like a teenager again.
I've been taking Andro 400 for about a year now. I've lost a little over 30 pounds. I have more energy. The biggest thing is just feeling better about myself, a lot more confident.
Guys, it's time to discover what Andro 400 can do for you. Call 888-400-0435. That's 888-400-0435. Or go to andro400.com.
What's my image?
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally and Sean Boy.
Standing in the Hall of Fame.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. Show 45 is out the gate and rolling.
Man, 45. You know, week after week we do this, Sean. I know our listeners probably crack up laughing because, you know, we call the number every week. But I'm 45? Wow. That's awesome. I mean, we're five away from 50. Think about that. That's almost a full year.
Doesn't seem like it's been that long, I know for sure. It goes by quick, doesn't it?
That kind of sounds like I kind of shocked you too, man. You're just sitting there. You're just like, what's going on? Man, 45. That's cool. I'm impressed, man.
Yeah, the first 50 have been good and hopefully just keep improving and bring you the next 50 and get to 100 and keep on rolling.
Man, you know, I mean, you know what? What's shocking to me is, of course, we week in and week out, we come up with the great guests. And as I always say, you're listening to the best sports talk. But man, I mean, this past weekend has been a whirlwind as far as the brackets. We touched a little bit about it earlier. Man, Rich Walsh talked about Stanford, you know, beating Kansas. That was just a huge shocker to me. But, you know, I kind of have a question on how things have been going as far as the brackets have been put together. Now, you know, you had the Wichita State game yesterday, which I thought was probably one of the better NCAA college men's basketball games that I've seen in quite some time. And, you know, they played against a tough Kentucky Wildcats team. Of course, Kentucky wound up winning. But what was up with Kentucky being ranked number 8? In their bracket, Sean Wally. I mean, there's no way in the world that that should happen. I kind of felt like Wichita State was hosed a little bit.
Yeah, that's definitely odd to see Kentucky that low. And it's interesting to see how they figure all that out. And, you know, it doesn't always match up. And that definitely was a case where Kentucky should not have been a number 8.
Well, they didn't play like a number 8. And man, it's just, that was amazing. But I wish that we would have seen that game in the Final Four, but it is what it is. I mean, I look forward to seeing Kentucky, you know, moving on and doing some great things, and let's hope that just, you know, wasn't lightning in a bottle for these guys, because they're actually starting to come around.
Let's head on out now to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines and welcome in big time guest number 2 tonight, and that is Greg Smith, senior writer at blacksportsonline.com. Greg, thanks so much for your time tonight.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Hey, Greg, you know, a great weekend for you. We're just talking about the NCAA tournament. And, of course, you're in Wisconsin, I believe, for for rounds 2 and 3. So how was that?
You know, it was really interesting. You know, I think I got a unique thing, you know, obviously by having Wisconsin in my pod of games there. So I got to kind of see the crowd really get behind one team, something that you don't really see at those neutral site games. It gave it a little bit different flavor, especially, you know, in the second, or technically the third round, I always want to say the second, because the NCAA wants to trick us into believing those play-in games are actually the first round game.
Right.
But yeah, that game against Oregon was something to see. I heard that on TV it sounded just as loud as it was in person. So yeah, that was definitely great to see.
Yeah, you know, the Oregon Ducks, you know, one of those teams that, you know, they were a little schizophrenic this year, you know, in the Pac-12. They started out as a top 20 team, and then they kind of fizzled out a little bit and came on strong. But, yeah, with Wisconsin, I mean, it just seemed like, you know, that Big Ten basketball year in and year out, it's just no match for – or, I mean, it's tough for other conferences to actually compete, especially with Wisconsin getting a little home cooking.
Yeah, once they got that, and you know, it's funny because in the post-game press conference or before they started, I got a lot of tweets from people saying, make sure if you don't ask, somebody ask something about Wisconsin getting that home cooking and getting that home court advantage. Because, you know, everybody could tell that really played a big factor. And, you know, and that was probably the first question asked of both teams. Oregon tried to downplay it and say, you know, before the game they said that they were a good road team. They thought they'd be able to handle it. You know, after the game they said they tried not to let it affect them too much. But I think that we all know that that has an effect when, you know, you think you're going to be at a neutral site, but, you know, you're basically playing a road game.
Greg, what are your thoughts on that? Do you think that's fair? Do you think, I mean, it is kind of neat to see, like you were saying, the entire arena, you know, rooting for one team, but should it be that way?
You know, it's interesting. You know, I personally am fine with it. You know, I think that the team, you know, be you're a 2 seed, a 1 seed, you deserve to play, you know, kind of close to home. So that's kind of your reward for having such a good regular season. So I personally believe that, but I do see the other side of it where, you know, it's not supposed to be a home game. If you're going to do that, you might as well just play the games, you know, at University of Wisconsin and make Oregon go up there. So I see that side of it, but personally I feel that, you know, if they earn it, they earn it. Let them go ahead and play that close to home game and have the home crowd behind them.
What are your thoughts on the upsets that we've been seeing? We saw a bunch of them this past week on Thursday, and they continued on Friday. There were 4 overtime games, of course, on Thursday, which set a record. It's just crazy how there seems to be almost a parity, if you will, in college basketball where these so-called, you know, underdogs are rising to the occasion.
Yeah, I think that, you know, part of it is that you see talent spread so much around the country. So it's not just, you know, your Ohio State or your Cincinnati who both got picked off early getting all of the talent. So there's other teams that actually have good players. But at the same time, this was also a year where we all kind of had a feeling, right, that we were going to come in and see a bunch of upsets and kind of a topsy-turvy tournament, and we knew that it was going to be that way. So everybody hoping that they were going to get that perfect bracket and get Warren Buffett's $1 billion, you know, those hopes got dashed really early.
Greg Smith, kind enough to join us on the Double with the Double S Express. And, yes, you were talking about brackets. I was just getting ready to ask you, how is your bracket faring up thus far?
Ooh, so, you know, after the first day, I was kind of pumping my chest. I was feeling good. I think I was in first. After that first day, I think I went 15 out of 16. And I probably should have just not said anything and just let that roll, because I kind of came back down to earth. I think I'm in the 55th percentile right now. I took a real bad hit over the weekend. So it actually started with Duke. Duke really messed me up. I should have known better than to pick Duke. I've been downhill ever since Thursday. I shouldn't really even talk about it.
You know, our previous guest, Rich Walsh, we were talking about that as, you know, as far as Johnny Dawkins at Stanford. But, you know, one of the other people that we had mentioned, as we mentioned Tommy Amaker a little bit at Harvard. And, you know, like you were saying, Duke, you know, you pull for Duke, you know, because of the fundamental basketball, and you think that they can at least get through the first couple of rounds, but it always seems like more often than not, they disappoint you.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting about Duke is that you mentioned you think they're going to get through the first couple of rounds. I was talking about this with someone else, and that I didn't even think, when I'm putting together the bracket, I didn't even think that it was a possibility that they would lose to Mercer. It just was something that never even entered my mind. You think, okay, they got Jabari Parker, they got Roddy Hood, they should at least be able to get through the first round, or really two. So, I definitely agree with you there. But, Duke seems to me recently in the tournament to be really hit or miss. It's either go out in the first couple or it's make a deep run. It's one or the other. They're not, consistently, the Duke that we remember from the Christian Laettner days.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, that's one of the things that, you expect them to actually go out there and at least survive the first couple rounds. But, as I was mentioning earlier, and I didn't get a chance to finish, I mean, we're talking about a Stanford team that's in the Sweet 16 that's Coach K driven by Johnny Dawkins. And then you have Tommy Amaker doing an excellent job at Harvard. I mean, that game was down to the wire of the Harvard-Michigan State game until about 2.5 minutes to go. But, I mean, these two predecessors are doing a real good job with their basketball programs.
Yeah, I think that's a testament to Coach K as well, though, in a way. Guys on your coaching tree are out there doing well. I think that always makes you feel good. But then, at the same time, when they start going a little bit farther than you at, quote-unquote lesser-known schools or mid-majors, Stanford's not a mid-major in the Pac-12, but still, a lesser-known program. That has to sting a little bit to see the protege outdoing the teacher.
Yeah, because you want to – year in and year out, yes, if you're Coach K, you definitely want to make it farther than your pupils. But man, you are doing a lot of things right now. And of course, I was reading a few articles today. And for those of our listeners who don't know, you're a writer for Black Sports Online. Great online articles. And I mean, today you were pretty much busy. I mean, you were talking about Terrell Pryor, Mark Cuban. But, one of the articles that I thought was interesting was Johnny Manziel. And you were talking about, his dunk contest. I mean, tell us a little bit about, because this was the first time I had heard or seen anything like this. I mean, was that a 10-foot hoop that he was dunking on?
Like I said in the article, I didn't really want to call him out. I didn't want to have to do it. But I'm watching it, I'm like, this just don't look right. Like, it really didn't look like it was, because think about it. Johnny Manziel is, they listed him during the season at about 6'1", probably. I think he measured the combine at 5'10", 5'11", at the most. So there's just no way that he's out there throwing down 360. And then there was another video. No. Come on. He didn't have CGI. This isn't X-Men. This isn't something where we got, Star Wars effects. There's no way that he was out there actually dunking on a regulation rim, throwing down 360s, throwing off the ball off the wall like LeBron and Kevin Love did in their videos a couple weeks back. Now, I just can't believe that. I can't get with that.
Greg is the lead college football writer for BlackSportsOnline.com. You've probably seen a lot of Johnny Manziel at Texas A&M. How do you think he will fare in the NFL?
It's interesting. I did see a lot of him. I think that there's a couple of things that he needs to get down if he wants to succeed in the NFL. I think that the first thing he should do is call Russell Wilson and try and figure out, hey, Russell, how do you avoid taking so many big hits, even though you scramble and use your legs to create plays downfield, whether it's running with the football and taking off and getting the first down, or just using your legs to buy extra time for your receiver so that you can get the ball to them, but you don't seem to take the big hit, because you don't want to, when you're Johnny Manziel's size, you don't want to end up being like Mike Vick, who always has a broken collarbone or a wrist or a hip or whatever he has at all times, because he's always taking hits. And then the other thing he needs to do is to continue to work on his footwork, kind of do what I like to call the anti-Matthew Stafford. So Stafford has all of the arm talent, but he has all the horrible footwork in the world. So he needs to avoid that and work on his footwork in the pocket so he can make accurate throws most of the time.
And we mentioned Terrell Pryor. What are your thoughts on him wanting out of Oakland, and where will his career go from here, do you think?
It's interesting. I thought that when they benched him during the season, I thought that it was, the writing was on the wall then. Even though I didn't, you know, he had, I think it was 11 interceptions in the games that he played in. But, you know, you face some pretty good defenses out there, you know, having to face Kansas City twice, and Denver was good at times. So I thought that he got a little bit of a bad rap. And, I mean, trading for Matt Schaub, what does that really do for you? So I would want to leave if I were him, too. But I don't really know where he could go. I thought that the first place that would have made sense was Philadelphia, just to see if he could do something with Chip Kelly. But then they signed Mark Sanchez, strangely enough. So I'm not really sure where he goes from here, but hopefully he gets a chance to play quarterback, because that's, you know, what he's kind of been hell-bent on doing. So hopefully he gets a chance to continue that dream.
Yeah, you know, quite a mixture, Greg, as far as the quarterback carousel is concerned. And you'd mentioned Matt Schaub coming to Oakland, which is, you know, I would look at that as an upgrade considering the quarterbacks that they had. And of course, you know, you made Sean Wally's day as far as talking about his beloved Seattle Seahawks Super Bowl champions and how Johnny Manziel can, you know, take a lesson or two from Russell Wilson. You know, I kind of have an off-the-wall question for you here, because I'm glad that you mentioned the Texas A&M-Seattle Seahawks tie. There's a big, big discussion that goes on as far as the 12th man is concerned. And now we know that that the Seahawks have indoctrinated that into their saying. But being around Texas A&M football, you know, how do the fans feel about that down there in Aggieland?
Well, interestingly enough, the Texas A&M fans I don't think that they feel angry about it, because the little known fact about all of that is that A&M actually licensed that name out to Seattle. So they actually have a deal, like a little business deal going with that. So it's not like, you know, they just stole it from them. They did it in a way, but they have worked out some sort of deal. So, you know, I think that it's fine, because Aggie fans ultimately at the end of the day are kind of like, you're the little brother when it comes to the 12th man, and we're the real 12th man.
Yeah, you know, and boy, for our Seattle listeners, I mean, don't take that badly. I mean, that, you know, that's a term of endearment, being the little brother now. But
yeah, sometimes it's okay to be the little brother. It's okay.
Especially when you're the Super Bowl championship, no doubt about it. So one of your other articles, Greg, you were talking about Mark Cuban. And this was an interesting one, man, because, you know, the big thing with Mark is, Mark's not shy as far as his words are concerned. And of course, you know, he's on a TV show, a business TV show called Shark Tank. And, you know, he came out with something interesting as far as his prediction on the NFL, you know, pretty much digging a ditch for themselves in about 10 years to where they'll be, you know, null and void. I mean, what was that all about?
You know, it's interesting. The premise of what he was saying is that the NFL basically is getting greedy at this point, and that the oversaturation of having more and more games on more and more days of the week throughout the week will end up oversaturating the market, and then fans will kind of turn off to the NFL because it's taking over each night of their TV viewing. I actually think that he has a point. Like, I don't think that he's wrong. I think that people, when you hear that, you automatically think, oh, it's just Cuban being Cuban. He's just jealous of the NFL being the clear number one. But I think that when you think about it, think about all of the big initiatives going on in the NFL right now, whether it's expanding the playoffs, expanding the regular season, whether it's putting more games in London, whether it's putting a team actually in London. Everything has to do with giving more games, which on one hand you say, hey, it's a really popular sport, fans want more games, but it's really a money grab, especially that playoff thing. It's a money grab so that the owners can get more home games, so that they can get more revenue in their pockets, which is fine. We live in America. You have the right to make as much money as you want. But at what point do fans say this is becoming too much?
And I think, Greg, that's part of the problem with some of the other leagues. You look at hockey, baseball, basketball, the seasons are too long. And the NFL, you know, two games probably is going to be fine, but you go much beyond that, and you're talking, you know, just like the other sports, 6, 7, 8 month sports. And it's just a bit ridiculous when you're taking up more than half a year just for your season. And then you extend into the playoffs, and next thing you know, it's almost time for training camp again.
Right, and I think that, you know, the thing about that is that if you have what if they start to expand into Saturday? That was the other thing that I didn't mention, that if they also now want to put games on Saturday, you start to impede on the college game. Like, it just becomes too much, and it also then gets the teams out of their routines, because we've already found out the teams hate these Thursday night games, right? They just don't like that because it completely throws off their routine. So if now we're playing on Wednesday or Thursday or Saturday or Sunday or Monday, then your routine is just all over the place, and we know that these guys love their routines in the NFL.
Greg, how have things gone? You've been on with TMZ Sports. How has that been for you, and what did you think of the experience?
The TMZ guys are great. I don't have any beef with them. Everybody, TMZ is kind of a lightning rod in the media world. You love it, you hate them. I have nothing but positive things to say about them. I mean, I've done their TMZ Sports TV show a couple of times, just talking about various topics going on, crazy things that happen. So my experience with them has been positive.
Yeah, you know, Greg, one of the things is that, you know, Sean and I, we were actually looking at, you know, doing some writing for TMZ. And, you know, I guess one of the biggest things that we were concerned about was is what type of shock value was going to come out of that, you know. And you know, a lot of people are watching you, man, because, you know, you could be the segue or the gateway for a lot of, you know, writers or journalists to come in and, you know, follow suit. And so, I mean, so tell us about that. I mean, because you watch TMZ on, you know from an actor, actress type of, or, you know, that entertainment realm, and it seems, oh my gosh, it just looks like they're looking for that shock value. But you're kind of telling us that it's a little bit different.
Yeah, if you look at that whole thing, if you look at their entertainment stuff and then their sports stuff, they are actually going a little bit more towards what I like to call some of the mainstream sports stories. So when they started that whole TMZ Sports thing, it was basically an exact mirror of what their entertainment stuff is like. But then now, if you look at it, they do, you know, more memes that are going on, or, you know, how people on Twitter talk about, like, a crazy dunk that happened, like, say, DeAndre Jordan dunking over Brandon Knight, making that crazy face. Like, they cover more stuff like that. So I think that what they've noticed is that you have to come a little bit more towards the mainstream, but still have some of your entertainment stories as well, which is kind of another example of where, you know, sports media is coming a little bit more towards Black Sports Online and what we do versus us going towards them.
Greg Smith, kind enough to join us on the double with the Double S Express. Man, hey, it has been a pleasure having you on the show. I mean, there's so many other things that we can talk about, and we'll definitely look to have you on the show one more time, at least in the future, man.
All right, man. I appreciate it. Thanks a lot for having me on, guys.
Thanks for your time tonight, Greg. And you can follow Greg Smith on Twitter at Greg Smith BSO.
Man, that was some great stuff from Greg. Got a chance to talk about, you know, quite a few things, man. We talked NBA, NFL, college football. We actually got a chance to talk about the 12th man.
Yeah, and we've had two great guests tonight, Rich Waltz and Greg Smith of BlackSportsOnline.com. And when we come back, we will dive more into the NCAA March Madness. Keep it locked on the double with the Double S Express.
I'm gonna pop some tags, only got $20 in my pocket. I'm hunting, looking for a come up. This is awesome.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services, platinum service without the platinum price.
Guys, are you having trouble getting to sleep?
Would you like to know the secret to getting a great night's sleep every night? Bruce Feeney discovered this secret, a new, all-natural sleep aid for men. Listen to what he says about it.
Hey, you know, I tried a product recently called Love to Sleep. It was a great product, helped me a lot. It took 3 or 4 days for it to start working in my system, and I fell asleep very quickly and got up rested. And if I got up during the middle of the night, I ended up coming back to bed and fell right back to sleep. I would recommend it to all my friends.
If you, too, would love to get a good night's sleep every night and wake up feeling great in the morning, try Love to Sleep, the new sleep aid for men. Your satisfaction is 100% guaranteed. And because Love to Sleep is all natural, it's completely safe with no side effects or risk of dependency. Go to lovetosleep.com. That's lovetosleep.com.
Let's get back to great sports talk with big-time guests on the Double with the Double S Express.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. And there is Sean Boyd's favorite bumper.
Oh, man. Yeah, you know, I love coming back from break with that song. You know, man, it's exciting all the time. For those of you, you can imagine here I am in the studio here and just, you know, bobbing my head and can't wait to get back.
Well, we've touched a lot on college basketball tonight. Let's get back to the NFL and free agency as it's still going on. Goodness, teams signing new players left and right, players uprooting and moving to different cities. Matt Schaub, now the quarterback in Oakland. Terrell Pryor wants out. He wants a trade or to be cut. And you have a new receiver in James Jones.
Man, there's been a lot of work, and we talked about this a little bit, Sean, last week. As far as the roller coaster ride in the first week for Raider Nation, they really wanted things to start out with a bang, and it seemed like it started out a little slow, but boy, did the floodgates open and open quickly. I mean, you're talking about Matt Schaub, the latest addition to the Raider Nation, and you know, I talked about Matt, and you know, we mentioned four quarterbacks that, you know, were on the radar for the Oakland Raiders, and you know, one was Matt Schaub, the other one was Mark Sanchez, and there was Michael Vick, and then the fourth one, gosh, who am I forgetting, Sean?
You're stumping me. You're stumping both of us right now.
You know, I know there's a fourth quarterback, and he hasn't been picked up. You know, that's the problem. And so three of those quarterbacks have been picked up, but Matt Schaub, you know, definitely, I believe, was the best option available for the Oakland Raiders. And, you know, the team player that he is, you know, Matt restructures his contract. I mean, you know, there's some huge dollars that were, you know, set for him this year. I believe somewhere upwards of $12 million, and then next year, $15 million. You know, he's kind enough to restructure his contract, I believe, down to $7 million. You know, which is still a king's ransom. You know, I happen to think that Matt Schaub is, you know, still one of the better quarterbacks. He just had a horrible year last year. And, of course, Richard Sherman will be one of the first to tell you. But, you know, the Raiders have done a really good job, you know, since the free agency started. And, you know, it started out with, you know, with Austin Howard at tackle and Justin Tuck, Lamar Woodley, and Terrell Brown from across the bay, Antonio Smith. And I mean, they bring, you know, James Jones in from Green Bay and Kevin Booth from the New York Giants, and, you know, re-sign another player in Osama Young, and then Donald Penn. So, you know, which is a tackle, you know, Greg Olsen, I believe, is definitely has this team looking to run. And so, you know, I hope Darren McFadden is healthy enough to actually take on some of the load. I happen to believe that the Raiders might need another running back, but, you know, that's just me. But, you know, they've beefed up that offensive line quite a bit.
What sort of grade would you give the Raiders so far in free agency?
You know, of course, you know, being a fan, I think it's a little more biased. But, you know, if I were to, you know, to take off my Raider Nation hat, you know, and kind of take a look at the grand scheme of things, you know, I'm not as critical as most analysts are as far as the age of some of the players. Because let's face it, you know, last year the Raiders are one of the younger teams in the NFL. I mean, you're talking about an average of about 24 years old. So they needed some veteran leadership. They went out and got that. And the players that they got, I really don't believe are over the hill. I believe they have 2 or 3 years, you know, left in the tank, which would give them enough time to teach some of the younger players, which is why I think the best is yet to come for Reggie McKenzie, because I believe he knows how to draft players, even though it hasn't materialized in the, you know, in the first 2 years. I do believe that he knows how to draft players. Let's face it, he's from, you know, that Green Bay lineage, and they know how to develop teams. And so, you know, if I were to give a grade, you know, I'd probably say somewhere around B minus.
And one of the quarterbacks you mentioned that was a possibility in Oakland is Michael Vick, and he has surfaced in New York with the Jets.
Yeah, you know, and I wonder why the New York Jets do some of the things that they do. I mean, they brought in Tim Tebow last year, and that was or the year before, and that was, you know, one of the bigger jokes in the NFL, as we saw. You know, you have Mark Sanchez, and I actually think Mark can actually be an okay quarterback. Do I believe he's a starting quarterback in the NFL? No, but I do believe that he can, you know, he can play the game. You know, now the New York Jets have switched everything. They've got Geno Smith as their future. And, you know, I believe that they're bringing in Michael Vick to actually teach Geno Smith. But the way the New York Jets offense is, it's not a flash and dash kind of an offense. It's a pro style offense to where the quarterback sits in the pocket and throws the ball down the field. So I'm kind of wondering why they brought Michael Vick in, because, you know, even though Michael Vick tries to stay in the pocket, he's more of an athletic style quarterback. And then Geno Smith is not, you know, he's that one that sits in the pocket. If he has to run, he can run. But, you know, this is one of the huge question marks going into camp for the New York Jets.
And the Detroit Lions have more firepower on offense as they purchased wide receiver Golden Tate away from the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, you know, Sean, I wanted to ask you that. I mean, is that a shock, you know, for, you know, as a Seattle Seahawks fan? I mean, is that something that kind of threw you for a loop a little bit when that news came out?
Not really, with the amount of money that Detroit offered up. I mean, $8 million to sign, and then you're looking at an average of $6.5 million per year for Golden Tate. And the key for them is they needed another weapon to complement Megatron. Because when Calvin Johnson's getting double and triple teamed, who else is getting open for them? It wasn't happening enough for Matthew Stafford in that offense. And now they've got another playmaker who's got speed, who could go get the ball, and he went for the money. Seattle's offer, he said, was laughable, and he said it would have taken him 2 years to earn what he's going to get in Detroit in year one.
Yeah, you know, this is probably one of the things that really snake bites a franchise when you win a Super Bowl with a group or with a bunch of players that are actually young. And, you know, for Golden Tate, you know, for the Seattle Seahawks, for that matter, because there's a lot of juxtaposition going on in the free agency with Seattle as far as keeping their players. You know, for Golden Tate in the rest of the Seahawks, winning the Super Bowl at a young age, you're like, man, I've done everything that I need to do in this city. I thought that it was less surprising for people on the outside looking in, because Golden Tate had some great years in South Bend, Indiana, you know, in the Midwest. And, you know, going back towards that part of the country, you know, is probably something that, you know, it was bound to happen. I mean, he wanted to be closer to, you know, friends and family, I'm sure. And, you know, it just seemed like the greatest thing. And you had mentioned, you know, the purse that he was receiving, and who wouldn't want to play across from Megatron. But I just don't think that it was as surprising, you know, for the rest of the NFL as it was for Seattle.
Well, yeah, and Tate has talked about publicly on Seattle radio that he's been shocked by some of the backlash he's received on Twitter, and people that he thought were Golden Tate fans have turned on him. And, you know, that's going to happen. You've got fans that want to hide behind a keyboard. And I mean, who wouldn't take double the money to move somewhere?
Yeah. You know, I find it shocking that Golden Tate is shocked, because I mean, at one point, wasn't he talking about a hometown discount? And then all of a sudden they give him what they thought was an honest offer, and he balks at it, and he comes out in the media and says, hey, man, they disrespected me. So, it's a little confusing, and I can see why the Seattle fans are a little upset, because, I mean, hey, he got offered a hometown discount.
You know, too, it seemed like Golden was a little ticked off at the contract that Percy Harvin got, because he made mention to they pay all this money to guys from other places. So that seemed to be a reference to the Percy Harvin contract.
Yeah, and well, you know, Percy, you know, a lot of people kind of question. I mean, wasn't around, how much was it, $14 million that Percy got last year?
11.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, so $11 million, and he played at, you know, maybe probably the most opportunistic time for him. And when he got in the game, I mean, because there was a huge question mark, you know, in that NFC Championship game, if he could even go. And boy, did he make an impact, you know, and people were wondering why he wasn't the, you know, the player of the game for that game, which I actually thought that Percy Harvin should have. You know, I mean, it was an awesome game.
Yeah, you get two full games out of him, the Minnesota game in the regular season and the Super Bowl, for $11 million.
Yeah, you're right, Sean. I'm sorry. That was the Super Bowl, and man, he showed out, and which is why I thought that he should have been the MVP. I mean, did he not run one back? I mean, that was just incredible for him to actually get in the game and make such an impact. And you know, he did some special things, you know, on it. There was one play on an end around that I just thought, wow, man, that guy was injured. That's just amazing. And so, you know, even though he played two games, I thought that they were probably the most important games, not just for him, but for the franchise. Of course, the Super Bowl being one. But, you know, $11 million offered, I thought that he actually earned his dough.
Show 45, Sean Boyd, big time guest tonight. A thank you out to Rich Waltz, the television play-by-play voice for the Miami Marlins, and Greg Smith, sports writer at blacksportsonline.com.
Yeah, two great guests tonight. And, of course, Rich Waltz, you know, our ties with him go back to Seattle. And, of course, I'm calling the games with the Seattle Mariners. Of course, you worked with Rich on a couple of occasions. And, you know, the ties that he has with us, with me, UC Davis, you know, going to UC Davis and playing college ball there. And, of course, right now doing his thing with the Florida Marlins, or the now Miami Marlins.
That's the voice of Sean Boyd in Sacramento, California. I'm Sean Wally, Tri-Cities, Washington, on the double with the Double S Express. Catch us on demand anytime if you miss the show or you want to hear it again or any of the past 45 shows on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, our own website, double-s-express.com or bbsradio.com/DSX.
Yeah, don't want to leave out Greg Smith, also awesome guest, awesome second guest, you know, of course, the writer for Black Sports Online. And we had Robert Littell on a few weeks ago, you know, two great individuals that write some awesome articles. So if you can get on the Black Sports Online and see some of the great articles that they put together and some of the things that they do, excellent job with the two guests we had on tonight, Sean.
Yeah, we've hit up two from blacksportsonline.com, and we can keep it rolling. We can bring both of them back or continue down the line of Black Sports Online riders and keep on trucking.
Yeah. So show number 45, man, in the books.
That's right. And follow us on Twitter at SS Express with no E, XPRESS, as well as you can email us. Find us on Facebook, Double S Express page. Send us a shout out. Send us a line. Let us know what you think about the show, who you'd like to hear from, who you'd like to see. We've got some big guests we're lining up in the weeks ahead. Don't want to give the spoil out on who that might be, but they are some big names in the pipeline.
You better believe it. And of course, you know, we would be remiss to leave out Alicia. You know, Alicia's doing an awesome job, our producer, and doing some cool things and get some great guests for us. So stay tuned for some of these guests down the line. And, of course, check us out on double-s-express.com and listen to a lot of our archive shows. Exciting sports.
That's going to wrap it up here tonight on The Double with the Double S Express Show 45. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks so much to Rich Waltz and Greg Smith, Black Sports Online. We'll talk to you next week. For Sean Boyd, I'm Sean Wally on The Double with the Double S Express.
Thanks for listening to On The Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for some more great sports talk and big-time guests on The Double with the Double S Express.